Profiles in Cinemania. Roger Corman. In Memoriam. Okay, pop quiz, hotshot. What do The Godfather and Gremlins have in common? Don't know? Okay, how about this one? What do Jack Nicholson, Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Bill Paxton, and William Shatner all have in common? Still scratching your head? Okay, how about this one? What do The Seven Samurai and Titanic have in common? Oh, all right, fine. I'll make it easier for you. Same question, but The Terminator and Little Shop of Horrors. Give up? The answer is Roger Corman. All of them have Roger Corman in common, a man whom the Cinemania Society has long considered patient zero for the pandemic of cinemania infecting our culture. Referred to variously as the spiritual godfather of New Hollywood, the king of cult film, or perhaps the most fitting for the aesthetics of this society, the pope of pop cinema, Roger Corman had a career in filmmaking that spanned a staggering 7 decades, one which fundamentally reshaped cinema and his image. He directed 55 feature films and produced an astonishing 385 others before he finally went to that great drive-in in the sky at the ripe old age of 98. Born in 1926, Roger Corman returned from a stint in the Navy during World War II to enter the placid waters of Hollywood like a school of piranha turned loose into a lake full of unsuspecting summer campers. Those around him described him as charismatic and highly driven, able to inspire his crews to outrageous feats of labor that studios could only dream of, in pursuit of films that titillated the movie-going public in ways not yet seen. Corman made his career pushing the boundaries of the system as far as he could go and often beyond because he was an independent filmmaker in the truest sense of the term. At times he worked with studios, but just as often he bypassed them. He was known for going straight to theater owners to screen his pictures, thereby giving the finger to both the man and the Hays Code. As media diversified, so too did Corman diversify. He was never above producing direct-to-video, direct-to-cable, and direct-to-streaming movies. Independent production companies he founded became cult standbys for the video rental crowd, like New World Pictures and Millennium Films, later renamed to New Horizon Films. Midnight movie buffs may best recognize Corman for his 50s creature features like It Conquered the World and Attack of the Crab Monsters, or maybe if you're a nerd, you might recognize him for his Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft adaptations. However, Corman's greatest contributions to both filmmaking and cinemania were more structural than the result of any individual film he was responsible for producing. First and foremost, Corman established the literal model for independent filmmaking, the core of which exists intact to this day. He kept budgets low and exploitation high. He hit audiences where they lived, and he never, ever, ever let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Pictures he directed and produced were absolutely what you see is what you get. He went right for the gut with titles like Sharktopus and Death Race 2000, or for lower regions, like Slumber Party Massacre, Barbarian Queen, and It's a Bikini World, the tagline for which was, "The bikini bunnies are busting out all over." Corman adroitly adapted to the aesthetics and expectations of each decade, but he knew at the core audiences wanted titties, monsters, blood, titties, fast cars, rock and roll, titties, crime, titties, and titties. And boy, did he deliver. Henry Ford said, "If I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses." Corman didn't ask either. He just rolled into town with killer fish, killer robots, killer plants, killer aliens, killer freak hippies, and the go-go girls who love them. Corman was never above a good rip-off either. He even ripped himself off on more than one occasion. For example, his 1983 space western Space Raiders ripped off the effects footage and the soundtrack from Battle Beyond the Stars, his space opera from 3 years earlier, which was itself an absolutely shameless ripoff of a different space opera featuring space wizards and laser swords. And if you grew up on home video like I did, those were the sci-fi movies that featured a spaceship with titties. Yeah, you heard me. And sure, the formula Corman created may have been refined by filmmakers like John Carpenter, or adapted for more modern audiences by Kevin Smith. And sure, there were guys like William Castle, who were known for gimmicking up low-budget horror pictures with joy buzzers installed in audience seats or flying skeletons. Compared to Corman, however, these guys' efforts were like adding vanilla or cherry flavoring to Coca-Cola. Put in whatever you want, the base recipe is not only unmistakable, it does all the heavy lifting. Corman's brash, bloody, boob-bedecked front concealed his far more powerful and subtle influence on cinema. He may have put the figurative fast food on filmgoers' plates, but he also added the figurative vegetables. Wait, what do you mean, Sinquisitor Ethan? You cry. I mean Corman was responsible for obtaining and distributing the most influential foreign art films to the North American market. To put it bluntly, if you've ever heard of Akira Kurosawa, Federico Fellini, Ingmar Bergman, François Truffaut, or Peter Weir, and you don't happen to live in Japan, Italy, Sweden, France, or Australia, respectively, it's because Roger fucking Corman made you aware of them. Without his intervention, it is likely that the entire generation of new Hollywood directors whose works draw inspiration from those aforementioned filmmakers simply never would have had careers. Which means everyone from George Lucas to Wes Anderson to Jim Jarmusch and everyone in between. Roger Corman's indirect influence on Tinseltown may have been profound, but his direct influence was even bigger. He launched many of today's most beloved and respected filmmakers, all of whom studied his methods of achieving maximal effect with minimal budget, which means making your fucking day no matter what. It didn't matter who you were or where you came from, any kid rolling into Hollywood with a pocket full of dreams and enough spare change for half a sandwich would get a shot if Corman thought they had what it took. Corman had faith in people, and in the hard, hard world of movie production where nothing is as cold as cash, that little glimmer of faith is more rare and precious than all the explosions, gore, and fanciful plot lines you can muster. The list of Corman alums includes, but by no means is limited to, Francis Ford Coppola, Joe Dante, James Cameron, Ron Howard, Irvin Kershner, and Peter Bogdanovich. Many of these filmmakers went on to pay homage to their mentor by including Corman regulars like Dick Miller, or even Corman himself in the film. This tendency for in-jokes was copied by later admirers of Corman's works, filmmakers such as Sam Raimi, John Waters, Lloyd Kaufman, and Edgar Wright. It's one thing to be great, but it's quite another to have great people think you're great. Although it is a bit of a stretch to call Lloyd Kaufman a great person, but that's okay. He's great in New Jersey. It may sound hyperbolic to claim that Roger Corman was responsible for the shape of cinema over the last 70 years, but that's just par for the course. Corman worked in hyperbole the way Rembrandt worked in oils, and just like any old master, once he showed a new way, it seemed like it had always been obvious the whole time. Patient zero? Hell. Roger Corman is the personification of Cinemania. We won't see another like him. We probably never deserved him in the first place. This has been another profile on Cinemania. This episode was written by Ethan Ireland and Andy Slack, and was performed by Ethan Ireland. Music by Meteor at meteormusic.bandcamp.com. Profiles in Cinemania is a product of the Cinemania Society, LLC.